Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Lifestyle. Sports cards and we live now.
Jeremy Lee in the building and every guest that you ever needed.
Sports cards after hours keep the hobby heated. Updates, hobby talk like you never seen it.
Sports cards live and none could ever beat it.
Sports cards is a lifestyle. Sports cards and we live now.
Welcome to another episode of Sports Cards Live with your host, Jeremy Lee.
All right, everybody, and welcome to episode number 222 of Sports Cards Live. It's Saturday night, March the 30th, 2024, and my name is Jeremy Lee, and I would like to thank everybody who tuned in last time for we had a Just Jeremy episode, followed by After Hours with Joe Perreault. Thanks, everybody who tuned in for that. Next Saturday show, up in the air. I may not be able to do one. We will see, but the PWCC Weekly Hockey Show is back tomorrow night with Josh Madigan from the Hockey Cards Gong Show. And I would like to ask you to download the Center Stage app on iOS or Android for quick and accurate comps card identification. And please join me in supporting the great team they have and the innovation they are undertaking at the Center Stage app. And also use protection, practice safe swaps, VeriSwap. It's an app and middleman service that lets you securely trade cards through the mail, fully insured up to $1 million. Download the VeriSwap app on iOS and Android and join me and VeriSwap founder Raymond Lee every second Tuesday on Instagram for the live VeriSwap trade desk. Also, Filth Bomb Breaks offers live case and box breaks, and they do so with responsibility and integrity. If you enjoy group breaking and you are looking for a company to break with, please check out Filth Bomb, streaming on Fanatics Live on 4 channels. 7 days a week. I'd also like to shout out Hobby News Daily and congratulate them on their 1-year anniversary today. They just finished a 4-hour live marathon. I got to go on for a few minutes. And just again, congratulations, all the great work they are doing there, aggregating some great content from over 20 writers, podcasts, and articles. Really cool things going on there. And Leighton Sheldon from Just Collect will be joining us for the Vintage Spotlight segment a little bit later tonight. And I also want to thank the Hockey Cards Gong Show for having me on as the guest host on their Wednesday night episode earlier this week, this past week. That was a lot of fun. Check that out on their YouTube channel. And if you value consistency and transparency in grading, check out taggrading.com for that sort of grading. As always, I want to thank all of our loyal viewers and listeners. And if you are not yet subscribed to the YouTube channel or to the podcast, please take a moment and do so. I would greatly appreciate that. And as always tonight, your comments and your questions are in play. So let's get to it. All right, here we go, guys. Tonight's guest started in the hobby in 1978, riding his bike to the toy store to buy rack packs looking for Reggie Jackson's, Pete Rose, Willie McCovey, and Jack Clark. He collected through 1987 and didn't come back until early 2021 when he went to sell some cards to buy a new refrigerator for the house, and it led to his rediscovering his passion for collecting. He started his podcast, the Rated Rabbi Sports Card Podcast, in March of 2023 and just dropped episode number 65. His favorite players of all time are Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, Barry Bonds, Tin Lincecum, Steph Curry, and Hakeem Olajuwon, and his favorite teams of all time were the San Francisco Giants, the San Francisco 49ers, the Golden State Warriors, and my Calgary Flames. He's originally from San Francisco, California, currently hailing out of Alexandria, Virginia. Let's bring him out. David Spinrad, welcome to Sports Cards Live. How are
Thank
you, bud?
Thank you, Jeremy. It is great to be here. I'm super excited. I've never actually been in the audience during the live. I listen every Sunday morning on my morning walk. So tomorrow I'm going to be in for a treat. I'm going to get to listen to us tonight, tomorrow.
I have to ask. So as a fellow content creator now, I always find it interesting whether or not you watch your own stuff. So I don't go back and watch my own show. I mean, very rarely if I need to find something, but that almost never happened actually. But I will listen to me on other people's shows. Yeah. I don't know why. It sounds what about you? Do you ever listen to your own podcast or how does that go for you?
Not only do I listen to myself on my own podcast, there are many times where I am absolutely certain that I am actually creating something for me as the audience. And my wife will catch me listening to the show, like, you know, be in the kitchen doing the dishes. Are you listening to your own podcast, sweetheart? Well, yeah, I mean, I really like it. I've kind of made it for me. And she said, don't you think that's a little bit narcissistic? I'm like, well, I mean, I don't know, it makes me happy.
Your wife's calling me out on, well, it's, I always find that interesting. Well, I hope you enjoy listening to this show. And I just want to say good morning, David. Enjoy your walk this morning. I hope you're having a nice sun is shining for you as you're listening to this today. After. Well, welcome everybody to the show where we are live. We got some people on Instagram. It's harder to see the comments on Instagram, guys, but if you want to come over to YouTube, that would be great. I want to welcome everybody who's watching us on X and Twitter, on Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn, and of course, Instagram. David, let's get into it. Let's get into a little bit about your hobby history. Mm-hmm. And just give us a bit, you know, I talked a bit about it in the intro, but give us your version a bit about, you know, how the hobby kind of grasped you at first and where we're at now.
Yeah. I mean, when I was a kid, it was sports all the time. So that was as many cards as we could ever buy and playing with them and trading them. And just in the neighborhood, loving collecting cards. And then, like so many people, went off to college and had, you know, many years where I kind of kept it light in terms of possessions, and I lived in a lot of different places. So I had my childhood collection, you know, my mom and dad's, but I wasn't really acquiring a lot of stuff. And then during COVID, like so many people, but it wasn't right away for me. It wasn't kind of last dance time. Everything was shut down, but, you know, being a rabbi, it's kind of like being a first responder. So while people were making sourdough bread and binge watching Tiger King, people were super freaked out and wanting to talk to me all the time. And kind of meanwhile, like, listen, lady, I'm going through the same crazy pandemic as you are. So between being a husband and a father and a congregational rabbi, I realized that it had been many, many, many years since I really had any space for myself. And it was right around the time, about a year into COVID, maybe a little bit less, when that biggest 86 Jordan sale was, right? When was that? January, maybe?
That was January 2021 on Golden, Golden Auctions. Yeah, two of them that night.
Yeah. So that hit like critical mass consciousness. It was in, you know, it went out of the hobby into mainstream news. And I heard about it, called my buddy, childhood Adam Kay. He was the kid I used to ride my bike to that toy store with, lifelong friend. And he'd kind of in and out, but more was in the hobby over the years. And I kind of just picked his brain. I said, how do I know what these things are worth? He showed me how to use eBay. God, that eBay, man. How much more time would I have if it wasn't on my phone? I'm like, I'm going to sell these. We had a really crummy fridge and I had a bunch of 86 Fleer. Didn't have the Jordan, but had, you know, those cards were super hot and was going to sell them, buy us a new fridge. And, I did sell the cards, but I spent all that money and much more, you know, getting back into the hobby. And it's been a really amazing 3+ years since then.
That's welcome back. Really. I just want to say Welcome back to the hobby. Let's get into, I want to get into the meat of the show. I feel like we're not going to have time to get through everything that I want to talk about with you. So, but we are going to take a minute and just say hello to who has joined us in the chat. Mookie Chilson is so excited for the Rated Rabbi. Great booking. Thank you, Mookie. Always good to have you here. The professor is with us. Tom Newman. What's going on? Tom 86 is here as always. Jeff McMahon, as always. Robert Scott, good to see you. Dodger Town 76. What's going on, hobby people? Good to see you. Dan's Vintage is here, says hello. Mark Santucci is here. Good to see you. Jeffrey Hart is here. Good to see you, Jeff Hart. Good to see you. Orlando from A Collector's Dream. Justin Bode. Bob Boozle says Tiger King, Last Dance, Sports Cards Live, etc. during the pandemic. I appreciate that, Bob Boozle. And good to see you. Mid-Atlantic says David has the best logo in the hobby. I got to say, I do love the Rated Rabbi logo. Stooks is with us. What's going on? Cardboard Corner. Joe Perot says NorCal represent. 1956 Tops guy. Matthew is here. Good to see you, Matthew. Great to see you. Mark says, I remember the stationery store and the convenience stores. Of course, of course. Oh, I see. You're in the comments too already, David. Very good. Very good. Clay Phillips, welcome to the show. 90s is here. Good to see you. And Simon is here, who I shared the screen with earlier today on the Hobby News Daily first anniversary show. All right. Why do you collect, Dave? Why do you collect? Let's just open it up with that big question. We're talking spirituality, the essence of sports cards. I'm going to open it up with, why do you collect, David?
Yeah. Well, Jeremy, that's usually my question to ask you. But since you beat me to it, I'll answer it. But you have to also. Is that a deal?
All right. Fair enough.
You know, I really do regard this card collecting as a spiritual practice. It's not a religion. And the difference between that to me is spirituality is something that comes from within. Right, where you're able to listen to your own inner voice and learn to trust yourself. And kind of religion, well, it has value. It's something that comes from the outside. Sometimes it can be experienced as something that people are telling you or some resource, some kind of text is telling you. So to me, I think card collecting at its best is a spiritual practice, right? So in terms of the hobby, it would be, are we listening to influencers all the time or are we actually listening to ourselves? So for me, it becomes about getting to know myself and expressing myself through something that I get to create that really, like, I really take the word personal in a PC. I take it to heart. So I collect to learn. I'm a lifelong learner, right? So I love the process of learning. I collect to learn. I collect because I want to create something beautiful and personal and meaningful. Something when you look at my cards, you would kind of get to know me, right? I collect because there's this really neat tension. It's not just in the hobby, but for sure we experience it between just loving our cards, right? Just opening up our cards, just loving them and just taking so much satisfaction and appreciation. And then that positive tension between that and just that feeling of desire, like, oh, that next card, right? And that beautiful tension of appreciation and desire, and to try to balance it with some kind of self-discipline, that's a nice thing to develop. So those are some of the reasons why I collect, yeah.
And do you find that the sports card hobby, does it make you a better person? Is there anything in the world of being a collector, being a hobbyist, being a sports card collector that has improved you as a person? Does anything that your wife might point to and say, ever since you started collecting, you know, you've become this or that? But anything there?
Yeah. So I think it's helped me be happier, right? It's helped me just to have a little space for myself, which has reconnected me. I think when we collect it, we get to touch a piece of our childhood again. And it's really important. It's play. Right? It's play. And I think that's really important for our souls. And then the question, if you ask my wife, I think she sees me be happier. She sees me, you know, I'd be able to leave work at home a little bit more, or leave work at work and just come home and just be me. So yeah, I think she would say that.
That's good. No, that's good to know. I mean, sometimes I feel like when we, you know, if you're a youngster, for example, and you're in the hobby collecting and you're actually, you know, transacting, I think you can learn some of those transactional skills as a youngster. While as an adult, maybe it just makes us, you know, feel more, like you said, we're more introspective. Maybe we get to know ourselves better. Maybe we can become more patient. Maybe we can just the simplicity in the collecting and these simple little 2.5 by 3.5 inches of cardboard canvas. Yet we can find so as collectors, as sports fans or non-sports fans, we can become so passionate and connected to these things. And I think a lot of us, I know me and you share that. Everyone, I got to think everybody watching right now probably has a bit of that, that they can say, yeah, you know what, that applies to me too. I want to bring up Dan's comment here. Listening to ourselves, absolutely wonderful concept. Instead of listening to what everyone else is doing or following what everyone else is collecting or the trends, be true to yourself first, I think is a great thing. Dan goes on to say, similar to collect what you love, collect what speaks to you and collect cards that have meaning to you. Exactly. I think that's really well said right there, Dan. Luke says, going for my grail at auction tonight. Wish me luck. Good luck, Luke. Good luck picking up that card. Bobby Baseball, at minimum, I think that creating a PC is an act of self-expression, appreciation, nice. Greatness,
yes.
and a pursuit that makes one feel simply ageless. Nice. Yeah. Yeah. I think those are some great comments, guys. So yeah, thanks for sharing them into the chat there. You'd mentioned to me, I just have it in my notes here, this in the system of objects. You want to share that quote?
Yeah.
Do you have that handy?
It's a 1960s French philosopher and sociologist and poet, this guy Jean Baudrillard. I did not read the book. I saw the quote on a wall at the Smithsonian in this really cool model car display. And the quote is, for what you collect is always yourself. And going back to what we were talking about just a couple of minutes ago, that if you look at my collection, I would hope that you would know me, right? So it would be an expression of a love of like something beautiful and clear, right? I'll never have the biggest collection. One of the great blessings for me, Jeremy, coming back in now is I actually, when I kind of looked out at the hobby landscape, I can't have a huge collection and have the cards I want, right? Because I wasn't able to leverage the appreciation of, say, 30 years in the hobby with the boom. That would be a whole different experience. But, you know, like all of us, you gotta get in where you fit in. And I got in at the peak. Fortunately, I didn't make too many big purchases. And the ones that I did, I love. So I feel okay. And the ones that I didn't love, I took a little haircuts rather than hold them. But collecting myself is I just want this like small, beautiful collection. I think one of the things we talked about off air was there's also a piece of collecting where it puts me in touch with my mortality. And I'll tell you in a couple different ways. When I buy a card, I really do go, well, what's the destination for this card?
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Yeah. If I'm going to buy it because I don't think I'm going to keep it, is there a market for me to sell it? And I don't usually buy to sell. It just, I did when they were just, it was ridiculous. But a lot of my sales during the boom were my own childhood collection that people were buying, you know, off-centered 1979 Fran Tarkingtons on eBay. So that's actually how I built my original nest egg. But just a small, beautiful collection is, that's kind of me.
I do love that quote. For what you really collect is always yourself. It speaks to, again, as you said, if you look at my collection, you can get to know me. And you know, there's a difference between collecting cards that you have personal nostalgia for, or cards of you know, events, teams, players, sports that mean a lot to you, When you do that, I feel like you are being true to yourself, and I feel like you are buying cards that are going to form your personal collection, so that maybe if someone does look at you or look at your collection, they might feel like they know you a bit better. They're going to know a little bit more. What are they going to know? Maybe they'll know who your favorite team was as a kid, or now maybe they'll know what players you identified with, even this by sport. Are you collecting baseball, football, basketball, hockey? Are you collecting the combat sport?
Yeah.
The combat sport type of card, the UFC, the wrestling, you know, and what players are speaking to you? Are you collecting Dennis Rodman, or are you collecting Jean Beliveau from the, you know, the classiest man to ever play sports, sort of thing, professional sports? So maybe people do get to know you. And then there's the eras. There's all the different eras of cards that we are always, I mean, if you collect all cards, you're looking from the earliest to the most modern, and people can see just how into history you might be. So I think that definitely hits home with me.
Can I ask that same question back? So how would I know you by your collection?
Well, I think you would, I mean, that's what I was thinking. I think you would see that I'm a hockey fan. I think you would probably figure out that I might be from Winnipeg, that I might, you know, have, there's a couple players there that in my childhood that I still have collections of. You might see that I respect the pioneers of all the sports and those who were really great at what they did. You might see that I'm a fan of some of the modern day superstars as well. You'll also notice that I'm not interested in modern day quarterbacks, the ultra modern quarterbacks. You might see that I'm not interested in wrestling or UFC cards. Nothing against it, but just wasn't something that I was really excited about as a kid. I watched up until like Hulk Hogan and Macho Man Randy Savage, and you know, that's kind of the AWA, even before there was a WWF. Never mind WWE. So, but you know, you might say I like shiny cards, and you know, some Shaquille O'Neal, some Ken Griffey Jr., that kind of thing. So, but what I also think, David, with all this is that our collections evolve over time.
Yeah.
And why? So if you look at a PC and think, oh, I feel like I know you now. Well, you'd know me at that particular moment in time. But along with our PCs evolving, we as humans are always evolving. So I think it makes sense that our PCs evolve. You were allowed to move on from things and on to others. Like you said, you made a few mistakes, and you're there. So does that answer the question?
Yeah, that was great. Especially that end part. I think that's a really great addition, right? Who you were 10 years ago is not who you are now, and not who you'll be in 10 years, but there'll be still some core elements that'll be unchanging. That's cool.
Right. Which actually, it's funny, this wasn't even planned, but I'm looking back at my notes and I see my next question for you is going to be, how have you evolved as a collector since coming back as recently as 2021? So again, that wasn't a planned segue, but it sure worked out well.
Yeah.
So yeah, speak about that, because again, this to me, it talks to the title of the episode and, you know, the spiritual essence, and just because, you know, we need to, well, I don't want to say what anyone needs to do, but I feel for me, I need to allow myself, and I suggest other people take, you know, don't be so structured, allow yourself to change direction once in a while. Yeah. Maybe not completely shift. Maybe you're not going to stop collecting baseball cards and go into football cards, but you know, be a little bit nimble, have some flexibility. So how have you evolved since coming back as recently as you did in 2021?
Yeah. Well, I think the first place to start in that answer is I let myself make mistakes, right? And if that's a good life lesson, I tend to be someone, you know, can be really hard on myself. And coming back here as a beginner hobbyist, right? As like a freshman, I made mistakes, and it's just mistakes. It's a learning curve. And it actually has been a really good instructive thing for life. It's okay. You make a mistake, you learn from it, you move on. So I actually want to see a huge mistake right here. I brought the box to show on camera. This, Jeremy, is one of three boxes of 2021 Panini certified. I bought this, first month back in the hobby when it was gold rush. It was crazy penny stock boom. And I had just come back in. It was insane. And it was just such a rush of information mixed with nostalgia, mixed with an ear on people are making money hand over fist. Not always. So again, learning from mistakes and then making fun of myself. When I first made this mistake, the me who made this mistake would have been never would have told anybody, let alone come on your show and talk about it. I bought 3 boxes of this and 1 box of the limited football. And all in all, the other one, this one was a loss. And the other ones were, after eBay took their fee, they were also a loss. So there's a learning curve and paying tuition and being okay with making a mistake. I think that's something that's changed. There is always another beautiful example on its way. I think that's the second thing I would say, is that do not stand in the kitchen without my glasses at 10:38 on a Sunday night, because I gotta get, just go to bed, spin around. There's another one coming and another one and another one. Okay, unless it's the one of something. But if it's, you know, whatever it is, a vintage car, for the most part, there's always more on their way. So I think that's another thing, how I've changed. There's less urgency. And then I think the last piece is I really understand, for me, what it is to create a unique collection for me. I don't want a collection that's anybody else's. And that might be the biggest thing that's changed of all is I have a master set of the 1984 All-Star Game, which is emblematic of that. No one else has that. And that feels good. It's my collection.
Right on. Yeah. So as far as evolving, is there anything, you know, is there anything that you feel, let me put it quite simply, actually, what's the one most important takeaway that you've experienced over the past 3 years that if you were to want to share with somebody if you're talking to your congregation and they want to learn about sports cards, is there maybe one thing that you would start with or finish with that would really, you know, speak to them and, you know, impact them? Anyone who's new to the hobby or that you're speaking to, what do you think you've learned that's the most important thing?
I would say that the thing I'd want, and I'm very measured in how much I talk about it with the congregation, like, what are we paying you for? Quit playing with baseball cards. So I don't talk about it, although it is on the website, on my bio. It's something I'm very proud of, because it's restored balance in my life. And it's reminded me not to seem too corny or hokey, but it's really easy to go through life like we're human doings instead of human beings. And it's just reminded me just to enjoy life a little bit, take my foot off the gas, smile, wag more, bark less. Yeah, it's made me hopefully a better, more balanced human being.
So you had mentioned to me that I think you kind of put it that, you know, I have a strength in all this, and my strength, which I mean, I say that people aren't going to, you might be surprised when I remind David of what he said his strength was, but he said, you have your strength is your PayPal. Now we're not saying he's got $1 million in the PayPal.
No.
We're saying
he uses
it to his benefit.
Yeah.
So explain that, because you'll do it much more
justice. Yeah. It's the most valuable thing I have in my PC, right? And each of us as collectors have certain strengths we bring to the table. And it's not a huge amount of my PayPal, but I recognize, like, that's my leverage point. So if I go into a show, if I'm going to sacrifice that point of leverage, I have to feel like I'm getting something that's commensurate for me, or else I'm just going to hold on to that strength, right? At the end of the day, I've definitely gone to lots of shows and gone home with nothing in my hands except my money and my PayPal. And I just really want to leverage that. I don't always do that, but more and more I recognize that we all have strength. So if someone is really card wealthy, that's a great strength. You know, I don't have, at this point, I've sold off and traded up. So I don't have a lot of card inventory to get liquid, but if someone has that, that's a great strength for them. I just don't have that.
Yeah. No, I think it's a neat way to look at it, that you can walk into a card show and know that you got your budget, and it's there when you want it. And when you leave with that budget still intact, you know, number one, you've resisted the temptation to buy something impulsively, and you're well equipped for the next time you go. Now, you came back into the hobby in 2021, as we've said, and I always wonder for all the people that came back during the pandemic, because of the pandemic, how many have stayed? Now, you've stayed, and you've really stayed. I mean, you're committed, it seems like. You're a lifer now.
Yeah, yeah.
What are your thoughts? How many people do you think came back when you did, stayed in the hobby? Like, do you have any friends that did the same thing? What are your thoughts on that?
I think there's a lot, actually. I think there are a lot of sort of people who fit a similar profile to me, kind of middle-aged man who collected when he was a kid. I think there was a huge number, that there was a huge influx across the board. I think when the easy money went away, I think a lot of the people who are in for the easy money, who loved cards, but were also like, the easy money is very attractive, right? I think a lot of them left. I think some of them stayed, for sure, fell in love with cards. And then another kind of side thought is, there are a lot of people sitting on a lot of cards who are way underwater right now. There are a lot of cards that are not in the hobby active. It'd be interesting when they start coming back to see what those do. But back to people who are kind of more like me, I think there's a lot of folks like us. And I think it actually has made, for me, a really interesting hobby experience. Someone like Iowa Dave, if you listen to Iowa Dave, he was on your show. It was a great episode, actually. Similar profile, came back in maybe a little bit earlier than I did, but similar. He's a lifer.
Oh yeah, for sure. All right, we're gonna start the vintage spotlight segment in just a couple minutes. Layton, just a couple minutes. Layton is there. I just want to do some more comments here and say, Stooks said the collecting has helped me come out of my introvert shell. I think that's because we being the community are so encouraging for people to come to card shows and go to trader nights and come meet people. I think it's just such a great way to introduce social activities to a lot of people who may have otherwise been introverts. So that's great. Mark Santucci said, in looking at cards, the question is, does the card fit the collection? I think that's, does it fit the collection? Does it fit the person who owns the collection? I think that's a great comment from Mark right there. 90 says, I never thought I would hear, I don't even know how to say it, Baudrillard quote on a trading card show. That's what Sports Cards Live is all about there, 90s. You know that. Fatal J says, YouTube sent me here. Don't know why. Guess I will stay here and chill. Fatal J, welcome to the show. Triple V says, when you realize what you are about as a collector, there's an inner commitment / love, finding a patient and focused lane to sustain and explore.
Nice.
That's an interesting comment, Triple V. Very good. Joe Perot says, I did not attend the 1984 All-Star Game at Candlestick, but I did attend the 87 All-Star Game at the Oakland Coliseum, and Tim the Rock Reigns was the MVP. So there you go. Jeremy is here, Mr. Foul Five Ball. And Mookie says, I came back to the hobby around the same time as the rabbi. The best part of missing so much hobby time is that there's so much to learn and explore and collect. And I got to say, I love that about the hobby as well. Mookie, we're still learning. I'm still finding cards I didn't know existed. And I absolutely love that. Vintage says, collecting has given me something to bond over with my son. He's 12 now, and we're headed to our second national in Cleveland. I think that's just awesome to do that with your 12-year-old son. Like, that's a dream for a guy like me who's got a 5-year-old boy. That's just great. And Michael Kadich is here. Welcome, Michael. Good to see you. Says, great guest. Really enjoying Dave's insights. MK, thank you for being here. Mid-Atlantic, there is no comparison between the energy levels it shows today and shows pre-pandemic. The hobby has reset at a much higher level of participation. Yeah, I think that's great. All right, let's bring on Layton Sheldon for the Vintage Spotlight segment. And David, I've asked you to come with a question for him or topic. I know you have it, so we'll do it. But let's bring him on. There he is, Layton Sheldon. How are you, sir?
Good. How are you guys tonight?
Good. And do you know Dave? Dave, if not, I want to say, meet each other. But I think you guys are familiar with each other. Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that right, Dave?
Yeah. We just talked on the phone not maybe a couple of weeks ago, actually. Yeah.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal. Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Leighton, well, welcome back. Hope all is well. And Leighton, unless you have any opening comments, I want to dive into Dave's question for you. But anything you want to say just to kick it off?
No, go right ahead. I appreciate you having me on today.
Of course. Okay, David, let's get into it. The mic is yours.
I've got two questions, and I think they're really good. I'm going to ask them both. Is that all right?
Yeah,
all right.
Go for it, please.
First question. Leighton, I listen to your pod a lot. I really, really enjoy how you break down new acquisitions, new collections. I love listening to the process, and I'm always really impressed how it's very methodical, and you really, it's very quantitative. And I like how you share it with the person who's selling the collection, how you share it with us. So I appreciate you go home. You have a whole process, right? That how you quantify the transaction. But what I really, so that's like the head part. What I really want to hear, and I think our audience also would really love it, is the qualitative. You know, what is it like? How do you keep that incredible, how do your eyes not bulge out? How did your heart not skip a beat? Like, what's that qualitative experience when something is way bigger and better than you? Like, talk to us.
Well, it's a great question, David. You know, the first way that I would reply is, and I guess maybe a lot of life for me comes down to, you know, competition and tennis, for example, is a sport that I, you know, not only follow closely, but I also play. And I know that, for example, like if you play tennis and you play against an opponent, it doesn't really matter if they're better or worse, but if you're really excited, what happens is you tend to flub your shot. You know, so in other words, if you are really super excited, even though you think you're just playing at a regular pace, you tend to hit long or you might hit into the net. And so the reason why I bring up that analogy is the same thing really with doing anything else that you love professionally for a living. There's absolutely been aha moments where I go in and I'm like, OMG, this is insane. I can't believe, like, I remember, you know, just last summer seeing, I mean, you know, six figures of vintage cards in like a filing cabinet that was worth $12. And, you know, when they first described the collection, of course, it was nothing the way that it actually appeared in person. But I think what I've been able to do, if I had to say, David, is I've been able to harness that energy in a very authentic and positive way. Cool. So I don't try to BS people. In other words, if I see something that is like, holy, you know, this is crazy, then that's going to be my reaction. Now, listen, nice. Do I try to keep it a little bit close to the vest because that's what I do professionally? Yes, but I don't find that it really helps me get or obtain a collection. So, you know, I do the best I can to slow down the ball, slow down the game, make sure that, you know, the last point of it is that I'm self-aware. And I do understand that there are going to be collections probably from this day forward, even unfortunately, they're going to be amazing, but I may not be able to buy them for one reason or another. So what I've been able to do, David, is I've been able to make sure that I squeeze the juices out of every situation in life, deals included, so that I can enjoy them. And that even if I don't actually physically get to own the cards, I'm like, wow, what a wonderful experience. And I'll take something out of it that's going to help me maybe in the future down the line, whether it be buy another collection or just something else in life.
That's really cool. That's really cool. Thank you. All right. So that one's from the heart. This is a head question. It's a question because Jeremy and I were talking just before you came on air. And I really think there are a lot of people, a lot of collectors in the hobby with kind of similar profiles to me. Collected when we were kids, got back in during COVID, who've stayed. I really think there are more of us. And there are a lot of us who collect vintage. And while certainly there's no one explanation to completely unpack a phenomenon, the phenomenon is, and certainly this predated the pandemic, but the real focus on high eye appeal, really strong centering, low to mid grade vintage, right? And I think that one factor is there are people like me. I know it predated, but with more of us back in the hobby, an emphasis on high eye appeal for a collector like me who is priced out of a higher grade for the most part, and has also learned from more experienced collectors like the two of you to really buy cards and not grades. So there are a lot of people who are really drawn to those kind of cards. And my question for you is, what is the future of, for example, an old label, lowish eye appeal, mid-grade vintage card, a 1961 Willie Mays PSA 6, so it's collector grade, but it's an old label and it just does nothing for the eye. And most collectors rather have a 5 or even a beautiful 4 at this point. What's the future of those other cards, though?
Great question, David. I think succinctly, the market will determine what's going to happen to those. So in other words, they won't be useless. They won't be rendered uncollectible. The price will just reset in a way that makes sense in the market. So it's a great question. But I think that they'll always have a place, in the hobby. But for example, the PSA 6 maze with exceptional centering might be $300. Then maybe one with, unexceptional centering and an old label is going to be 65% of that, which is going to be $200. My point is there will just be a new foundation, a new base for those cards. And much in the way I feel like we as a hobby have looked at, let's say, the qualifiers. I think the same thing's going to happen with like an old label 6, as you say. In other words, is it going to be a 4? Is it going to drop by 2 grades the way that qualified cards did in the past? I'm not so sure that'll be the case. At the same time, I bet you if you look at the numbers on a really well-centered 4 or 5, there's going to be some people, I think, even the years to come, that still remain bewildered as to how can that sell for more than a higher grade or a higher number. But I think that's what makes the hobby fantastic, is that there really isn't a right answer. And to be fair, right, there's something about saying when everyone else is zigging, you zag. And so I've asked this on my Instagram post with the 1952 Topps Mickey Mantle recently. Yeah. At what point does the off-centered and not as desirable 6 actually become a deal or value? Meaning if that 4 or 5 that's well centered keeps going up, theoretically, it's still a 61 Topps maze. Even though it's PSA 6, and I agree with you, David, it's ugly, right? It still has a place in the value chain.
Okay.
Yeah, David and I kind of winked at each other as you were speaking, Leighton, because I think why we did that, Dave, is Leighton said almost the exact same thing that I was saying yesterday, or actually, back on Wednesday when you and I got together, is that I could see that being the same thing, Leighton, where right now on PSA cards, anyway, we have qualifiers on cards that are, something's wrong with the card. And those cards then sell for, say, 2 grade points lower than the non-qualified card would for that grade point. And I think I said the exact same thing, Dave,
Pretty much.
Basically, our cards with qualifiers are just not on the slab. They're now consumer-driven qualifiers because people are becoming more and more sophisticated as time goes by and more content consumed and people are getting advice. And we're seeing that's kind of the way it would work. So I was kind of smirking, Leighton, because I'm glad to hear that, you and I are on the same page when it comes to that, but it was right down to the level of detail. Okay. Well, that's great stuff, fellas. Leighton, anything, did you come with any questions or topics for David and myself here tonight?
Well, David, I'm curious, I've listened to your podcast and, I was curious from someone who's kind of like re-entered the space. There's a lot of talk these days. I mean, there's so many different opinions as far as it doesn't matter what it is, grading, numbered cards, mistakes that a company might make, whatever the case may be. How do you keep some of that noise at a reasonable level in your head so that for someone like you who doesn't do this professionally, it still actually is an enjoyable hobby? And I'm sure that there's things wrong or that maybe upset you. But how do you make sure that you continue to look at the bright side of things? And how do you make sure that you consume the content that makes you feel good about the hobby that you enjoy listening to?
That's a great question. Because I really love listening to different hobby podcasts and YouTubes. And, listen if I'm walking the dog or working out. But if I find myself getting agitated and aggravated or just, it's just noisy, I'll move away and I'll try to find stuff that's a little bit more collector driven. Or I will actually think, not listen to any hobby content just until I can sort of get quiet again. You know, one of the things I'm really, really committed to is my own understanding of the actual dictionary definition of what a hobby is, which is something in my leisure time for pleasure. So, you know, I'm not a professional. So if I find myself in my leisure time getting annoyed, that's not what I want. So I try to just kind of avoid it. Because it can be a very noisy hobby, and which is an odd thing, because there's also people out there who must have the most insane collections who have nothing to do with any of this. Who are like, what do you mean it's noisy? It's the quietest hobby in the world. We just don't know who they are.
Yeah, well said. Yeah. Good stuff. Layton, I want to do a couple comments that came in that are directed to you. Justin Bode, a big fan of Layton, says, good evening, Layton. Justin, always good to see you here. Buddy, Stuke says, Layton, saw your basketball collection purchase. How often do you get a chance at the George Mikan Bowman rookie card?
Oh, I mean, I could tell you in the last 5 years, I've owned less than five of them. And if you really put me to the test, I would tell you I've owned, I'm going to say three or four, and I could probably tell you where they came from. So it's not that easy to get.
There you go, Stu. That is a tough card. That is the basketball grail pretty much right there. So Dave Marone once says to you at Just Collect, are you trading on eBay only or will you reply on your website? I hate fees. I'll just point out to David that you can't, I don't know, Layton, correct me if I'm wrong, but you can reach out to Layton on Instagram or Just Collect. Those Instagram handles are on the screen right now on the ticker. But Layton, please respond to David yourself directly, if you don't mind, just on how you want to move forward.
Sure. So it's a great question. So the first thing is, if you email me, Layton@justcollect.com, or if you DM me right here on Instagram under Layton Sheldon or my Just Collect account, and you ask a question about a particular card that we have on eBay, or to be fair, another platform, we'll be happy to reply to you. But one of the things I want to help some collectors right now, because they may not understand why, let's say, a company or a dealer has a certain type of behavior. It's a great question the individual just asked. However, if you ask that question on eBay, I've had, even like as of this week, we'll have people ask on eBay, hey, my name on, you know, IG is such and such. Can you do any better offline in person? All these types of things, which you may not realize, but to someone who, I may not love eBay, but I understand the platform and I understand the rules. And so if you ask us being a dealer, it really doesn't matter, collector, et cetera. If you ask someone via the eBay messaging system to take business off of eBay, you're really putting that person in a difficult position. And I just want to be clear, my company doesn't respond at all. And the reason why we don't respond is because we understand that eBay has bots, et cetera, they manage things. And so we're hoping that people figure out, by us not replying on those types of questions, it's not that we don't want to sell cards, in fact, the opposite. We'd be happy to. However, we want to make sure that we maintain our ability to sell those cards on that particular platform. So just something for collectors to keep in mind, to be careful about the platform in which you're sending the messaging on, or the type of messaging you're sending on that platform.
All right. I think you're handling it exactly right, Layton. And it's good that David got to ask the question here. So thanks for that, David. And Layton, anything else you'd like to let everybody know before we wrap up the Vintage Spotlight segment here on Saturday, March the 30th, 2024?
Well, you know, I've had the opportunity recently to buy some really amazing collections. And so if you want to see the video, if you want to read the full story, you can always do that on our blog at blog.justcollect.com. You can check out our YouTube channel on YouTube at Just Collect. And I've had folks ask me a lot of times, like, hey, you know, do you sell these cards? Do you take a waiting list, you know, for some of these cards? And so, you know, the reality of it is I don't have like a one size fits all answer. So if you want to talk turkey, if you want to ask me a question, don't be shy. Drop me a line. Like I said, email me, DM me, and I'd be happy to talk to you about some of the cards and the collections that we purchase.
There we go, guys. You can follow Leighton on Instagram at Leighton_Sheldon or just _collect and listen to his podcast like David does, our guest David does, Trading Card Therapy. You can catch that on all wherever you consume your podcast. Leighton, thanks as always for joining the Vintage Spotlight segment. And I'm looking forward to the future when we maybe take it to the next level. So thank you, Leighton, for joining us. I'll let you say goodbye, and we'll see you again soon.
Thanks, Jeremy, for having me. David, it was great seeing you.
Same. Take care.
Take it easy.
Thank you, Leighton. All right. David, before we get back to it, I want to go through a couple of comments that have come in. Bobby Baseball here said, committed completionist, stark individualist, fan of greatness, admirer of teamwork, guardian of history, via my personal collection, You See Me.
Nice.
I love that, Bobby Baseball. What a that's like poetry right there, isn't it, David?
Oh my gosh. Nice.
Very nice. Very great comment there, Bobby Baseball. That's already from about 18 minutes ago. David Marone said, sevens are the most underrated grades. I love the new 5-7 PSA. I think he loves 5-7s. Great vintage grade is what it sounds like. That's good stuff right there. Brendan Ryan says, I'm a fan of the Rated Rabbi's rabbit hole perspectives. And good evening to you, Brendan Ryan. He goes on to say that Dave's voice is so relaxing. I've noticed that too. Justin Bode, I love how you get to know yourself better as you collect. Very insightful. I think so too. Actually, I'm going to change that. Do we get to know ourselves better as we collect, or does collecting enable us to change how we are a little bit and augment ourselves, add more, another dimension to us as humans? Pretty deep stuff, but that's what this episode. Did you have anything to respond to that comment with, David?
No, it's just so thoughtful. I just love this inner game. And I think the one thing that we haven't talked about yet is like what a great treat it is to have these deep conversations through the vehicle of cards. Right? That's really what it is, like the spirituality to me. We actually have deep conversations of identity and understanding through this medium. And I'll be really honest with you, like it's not always easy for guys to have these kind of conversations. So to be able to go there and not like feel super weird or uncomfortable, I don't know, it's kind of cool.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And I mean, what other hobby, and I don't know, I'm not, this is not a loaded question, but like what other hobby would provide this sort of opportunity for, you know, middle-aged men, and not just middle-aged men, young men, old men, women, of course, as well, too, because there's often women in the chat here as well. But what other hobby provides this? I'm sure there are others, but nothing that I see myself getting to, you know, whether you're, you know, maybe you're into mountain biking. So, you know, but, you know, you're mountain biking. I don't know that you're joining that you're joining live chats to talk about it after maybe the whole community out there. I don't know about, but I love it as well. And you made a comment to me the other day just about like how important it is to have your card buddies and what that means to you. Can you just touch on that? Because I want to hear your thoughts on that, David, because it's been a huge part of my life now, right back from when I was in, you know, grade four, and me and my best friend would hop on the transit bus with our parents probably panicking, and we'd take the bus downtown and go to the card shop that was in the back corner of the comic store.
Nice.
And we spent our afternoons there.
Yeah.
And that was my buddy. He's still one of my best buddies.
Of course.
He's totally out of cards now and has been for probably 35 years. But as the years have gone by, I love my card buddies.
Yeah.
They are my cherished friends. Not that they're other friends. I love my card buddies. I want to hear from you, though, about what it all means to you.
Yeah, I'll come at it from two ways. The first way is my oldest, bestest buddy, Adam Kay, was that kid on his bike next to my bike riding to Arthur's Toy Town in Novato to go through the rack backs and try to find the Stars on Top showing. So from 7 years old to now, he's my guy. And then another friend, West Coast Jewish Chris, is a friend who just become a Jewish deep Chris. Right. And he just used to be Jewish Chris, but then I did a funeral for this woman and her son's name was Chris and he lived through the North Carolina. So Jewish Chris became West Coast Jewish Chris, who lives in San Francisco, and the three of us have a text chain and we share mail days and we also like are deep friends. We share things we're going through in our lives. They're the guys I will to share celebrations, to ask their insight and input on a card. So there's these old deep friends. And then I have new friends from it, which doesn't happen that often when you get older. So like Matt, 1956 Tops guy, who was recently on my show. We just met through Instagram, and that guy has the most incredible eye. Right, really helped me advance as a collector and just to really understand vintage better. He's a friend. He's a trustee. He's like a consigliere. I'll send him a card. What do you think? He's helped me on my. He actually helped me on my 52 maze big time. It's a great way to make deepen old relationships and then have real new friendships. And I think maybe the last thing I would add: we're living in such a polarized time, where it's really hard sometimes to talk to people because of our differences. And we can have completely opposite views on every single political issue. But if we share cards, we can be friends. And then maybe it can just soften those differences and we can remember there's a human being standing opposite me, not just an opinion. So there's a lot to be said for all of that.
Oh, for sure. I think that's a really, really well said. Okay, some more comments here. Layton's gone, but Dan's Vintage said that I can say from much experience that Layton is one of the best dealers to deal with. So I wish he was here to hear that, but that's very nice, Dan. Mookie says, I agree with the rabbi. The luxury of being an amateur is that it's easier to opt out of the drama and live in the light. Yeah, he's right. He's so right. Dave, there are days where I'm like, I wish I could just delete my YouTube as a consumer of it. I could delete my Instagram, my Twitter, but I don't. I want to know what's going on, even if I don't like it. I just want to know what's going on. But Mookie is right. I think that's an astute comment, Mookie. Thanks for being here. Mark Santucci says, I asked, what other hobbies do? He says, people who like music and movies. Yes. I can't. Of course, right? Wonderful hobbies. I love both. But and this isn't. I'm just wondering: are there? Because sure, there can be live streams talking about these things. That makes a ton of sense to me. But are there events that they go to where they gather in person and there's extracurricular activities? I'm not trying to say our hobby is any better than that one. I'm just trying to draw parallels and see how we stand out and are unique. But great point, Mark. Thanks for pointing those ones out. And JH says, I feel totally comfortable loving a great Griffey refractor from the 90s with my buddies.
Nice.
Good time. Hey, yes, definitely with you. And we have a Facebook user whose name I can't see says, Shalom, which is hello in Hebrew to Dave. I think it means several things, not just hello.
It means
hello, goodbye, and peace, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And the professor says, what are some of the polarizing issues that David sees exist in the hobby specifically? Is that something you're willing to touch on, David?
Sure. I mean, I think a lot of the noise is around polarizing issues. I think the one that's always whatever the news is of the week. It seems that right now, card, whether you want to call it restoration or alteration, is pretty polarizing. On either sides of the polarity, people are like, oh my God, I really got to tell you, you're altering a card, really? And the other side is like, are you kidding me? There's nothing wrong with this. And they're very strong opinions. I will say my litmus test for that, since we're talking about it, is it's pretty simple, is would I disclose this were I to sell the card? When I put it in the eBay description, I will tell you I have a 1962 Bobby Richardson that I bought and I took a pair of pantyhose, little piece, and I got the wax off. I ever sell it, it'll be even that, like, just for my own integrity. Like, would I tell you I used whatever card care? I'm not, no pointing fingers. If I wouldn't, well, why not? To me, I'm not, no judgment. Everyone has to do, you know, it's not what this is. But for me, if I wouldn't disclose that, I would be withholding it, and I would be withholding it for me because I would think there's something I wouldn't feel good about. For me, it'd be wrong. So that's like the litmus test on this one. And I know not everyone feels that way. So that's sort of a polarizing thing in the hobby right now. And yeah.
There you go. All right. No, I think, hey, that's one that we're all aware of. But there to the professor's question, there you go. Let's move on. Dan's Vintage says, I'm Irish, but my wife is Jewish and a major part of my PC is Jewish players, full Sandy Koufax PC, full Al Rosen PC, and developing a Hank Greenberg PC. Very nice, Dan. Nice. Good luck with that, with the Greenberg. And I'm a fan of Sandy Koufax myself. Not that I really ever saw him play, but I'm certainly a fan of the history of Sandy Koufax. All right, I want to go to this next topic that you and I discussed the other day, and you mentioned to me that you're trying to build a beautiful but small collection.
Yeah.
And I said to you, okay, but what is small? Just like I may define what a GOAT player is one way, and someone else may define what a GOAT player is the other way.
Yeah.
You may define what small is one way, and I may define it the other way. So when you say you're trying to build a beautiful but small collection, can you give us a bit of detail on what you mean by that and how that's working out?
Yeah. Again, it's acknowledging where I got in and when I got in. And so a little bit by necessity and a little bit by sort of desire. I want something to be manageable. I do have this thing in the back of my mind that I don't want to be really a burden to my wife, even though I have West Coast Jewish Chris and Adam K. If something should happen, he's dead and I got to deal with all these tchotchkes, right? Like, I don't like make it easy on her. So in my mind, part of it is I want to have a manageable collection where I can say, listen, just the ones in this case, everything else doesn't really matter. That's a piece of it, both of it out of respect for her, for when I got into the hobby. And then also it helps me to clarify one thing I've been thinking, I actually want to really see if I'm doing this. I have the idea that I want to have 10% of my cards hold 90% of the financial value. And then conversely, I want 90% of my cards to have 10% of the financial value. So it's, you know, not going to be a lot of cards. To do that, I have to really know what I want, you know? So I have to be willing to identify, I have to really like pass on a lot of good cards to get a great card, pass on great cards to get a transcendent card, and acknowledge that they're just, oh, I'll never have everything, but I can have a couple of cool ones.
We'll never have everything. And there's always more cards to buy. So when one goes by, one kind of passes you by, you missed it, you forgot about it, don't worry about it. There's always something else.
Yeah.
But sometimes we embark upon a project where we need certain cards, and there may be an unlimited amount of them. But our friend Matthew, the 1956 Topps guy, puts in the chat here. He says, not sure if I've already discussed, but Dave's 1984 All-Star Game set is one of the most interesting set creations I've ever heard of. Conceiving our own checklists is one of the best hobby ideas. And I got to tell you, number one, I want you to talk about your 84 All-Star Game set. It's very cool. You sent me a picture of it. But I love this second part of this comment from Matthew, which is conceiving our own checklists is one of the best hobby ideas. That's how I roll. I want to have the option personally to be beholden to a checklist that I didn't pick the players on it. I want to be able to say, you know what, maybe it's an 80 card checklist, but I only want 25 of them, and I'm not going to feel the need to have to get all these players I don't care about anymore. Totally. I love that part of it. But Dave, can you speak to that if you'd like?
Yeah. Also, I would love to.
Tell the audience about your 84 All-Star Game project.
Yeah. So first I want to speak to what you said, then we'll go to the 84 set. So again, learn by, you know, learn by doing. I am really not a set collector. I put together a mid-grade raw run of 1950s 49ers as a way to, you know, it's interesting that it's not like baseball. I know all the Niners history during my life, especially from the 80s on, but there's not a lot on the 50s. There's actually only one book about the 49ers before Joe Montana. One book. It's just not, it's not remembered like baseball. So I wanted to get to know my favorite team. I set about building of this raw run and it was fun, but you know what? Last night I sold off the team set from 55 and I have a few others up on eBay. And the only one I want to keep is the 52 Bowman Large because it's just gorgeous. So I'm not a set collector. I don't want the volume. It feels like it's like homework, right? Like responsibility. Similarly, I was doing a Willie Mays run and it started to feel like work. I'm like a responsibility. I got to get the 66. Like, ugh. So I paused it. On the other hand, the 84 All-Star game, my dad took me and my dad took my brother, July 10th, 1984, Candlestick Park. We sat upper deck, just right of center field, like almost out of the stadium. Birds were lower than we were. But I was there, man. I was in the stadium, like the center of the world, and I was in the center for that moment. Great memory. Again, coming in, I want to have something that's unique to me. And like that's such a hobby key. So I came up with the idea for a master set. It's a PSA graded master set. It has, of course, the starting lineups from the AL and the NL and the benches. So there's 60 players, 30 on each of the rosters, NL and AL. There are 10 coaches, so 5 from each team. There are 5 announcers. Al Michaels, Howard Cosell, you know, there's 5 announcers. That gives us 75. And then there are 2 first pitches, Carl Hubbell and Stu Miller, 2 honorary captains, Hank Greenberg, and who's the other one? I'm having a senior moment. Who's the NL? Oh, Willie McCovey. So McCovey and Hank Greenberg. So I have 79 cards. All right, a few $100 for the Greenberg, the McCovey, whatever. And then the bottom of the first inning, the camera pans and catches Joe DiMaggio. You know, it was white swept hair. He's wearing a sport coat. He's wearing a sport coat and a tie with a pale yellow sweater. He's Joe DiMaggio. And all of a sudden this master set, you know, got expensive. But this actually I have right here. This was the 80th and final card. This is the 48-49 Leaf DiMaggio. And I finished the master set with this. So 80 cards in the master set. And then I've built around it. For example, Huey Lewis in the news sang the national anthem. I have an 85 lenticular Slurpee disc, you know, and a bunch of other things. Certain players get mentioned during the broadcast that picked up their cards. And, you know, it's a one of one checklist. It's a lot of fun.
Really cool. Really cool. Well, that's awesome, and you sent me a picture of it. It looked really, really nice. Put up that DiMaggio, though. I want to use my I want to use the spotlight feature here so people can see. There we go. There's the spotlight on it. People can also get a bit of a better look at some of the cards behind you.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful 1.5. I think I saw it.
One and a half. Yeah,
looks very nice for a 1.5 there. Yeah,
yeah. It has a little. I mean, if you hold it at a certain angle, you can see it has a little crease. And then the bottom corner has a crease, but really nice registration. There's none of that ink smear from the card that would have been on top of it. It's just a very, very nice example and a great example of buying cards, not grades.